Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast, part two of our super pod. I'm copying Bill Simmons there, except that I did not grow a mustache recently. I'm John Manuel, joined by Jim Callis. If you want an overview of the entire draft deadline situation this year, you know, how messed up it is, overall a view overview of the entire first round, that's on the National League side of the podcast. That's on part one. Part two, we're just going to continue bearing down on the American League, team by team. You have fewer teams here. We don't have the overview. Should be a shorter file. So, Jim, we're just going to dive right into the American League. Let's start off with the Baltimore Orioles, picking fourth overall, Dylan Bundy. Also, they've got their second rounder, Jason Esposito, who's had some advisor hijinks. I believe he's been through several advisors here. No longer a Boris Corporation client. And then sixth round, a perceived tough sign in Nicky Delmonico. They've got some guys down the line, Jim. It's kind of an interesting draft class. What do you expect to happen here with the Orioles? And do you expect any chance they don't sign Dylan Bundy?
No. I mean, Bundy's one of those guys. I mean, we said this about Strasburg. We said it about Bryce Harper last year. He's so talented, he's going to get offered more money than he can turn down. I mean, we'll say the same thing about Bubba Starling when we get to the Royals a little bit. You know, the record guarantee for any high school pitcher in the draft is $7 million. And I think Dylan Bundy's going to get somewhere in that neighborhood, maybe more. He'll get more. You know, Beckett got that deal in 1999, and Rick Porcello got that deal a few years ago. He'll get done. I mean, he was throwing out, $30 million price tag during the spring.
Yeah.
The 6-year, $30 million contract, which isn't going to happen, but he's just going to get offered too much to turn down. Esposito is another guy, stuck on slot. Had the Boris Corporation going into the draft. He's with Legacy now. I've heard some talk that there's some dispute over, and there's this always happens with a couple guys in every draft. The team thinks the player's side promised one thing. Player's side doesn't think they ever made that promise. So we'll see. I think he'll get signed. And then Nicky Delmonico, the more I hear about it, I do think the Orioles are going to pay and sign Nicky Delmonico in the sixth round, Knoxville high school third baseman. And we've also heard that they've offered sandwich money to a Maryland high school third baseman named KJ Hockaday, and have not been that has not been accepted so far, but he might be the late round guy that they put some money into.
Love that name, KJ Hockaday. That's a great name. That's one of the better names in the draft. Jim, the Boston Red Sox get a lot of publicity for their draft signing. I don't think there's another way to put it. They get a lot of attention. Their fans are informed fans, and they follow the draft quite a bit. And here you look at the Red Sox, and their first four picks are unsigned. They got a couple other guys in their first 10 rounds unsigned. It's going to be a very active club at the deadline. Let's just go pick by pick. Matt Barnes, he's going to sign, ain't he?
He will. Matt Barnes is probably a guy who, when Sonny Gray signed 3 weeks before the deadline for just a little over slot, was a little disappointed because he's right behind Sonny Gray. I think, we keep saying this, college junior, I think the Red Sox have been allowed to make him a slot offer and not anything more. And at some point, I don't know if it'll be today, if it'll be over the weekend, if it'll be Monday afternoon, MLB will start allowing teams to make offers. And I think there's some of that going on anyway, but officially, I'm not saying the Red Sox are doing things they're not supposed to, but there's no way you can deal with this many players and not at least be talking money with agents. There's got to be teams doing that, but I just don't think, Matt Barnes is another guy who's not going to sign for slot, these artificially low slots. And so that hasn't gone anywhere yet, but he'll sign. I'd be very surprised if he didn't sign.
And there are other college juniors. Let's stick on them. And Jackie Bradley in the same boat. Correct. He's in Boston. According to his Twitter feed, he's in Boston right now.
Well, yeah. I mean, a lot of times they get the physicals knocked off early because you don't want to get a deal done at 11:30. And really, it protects the player because I think there's a window.
Sure.
If I sign Jackie Bradley, for instance, at 11, and he was hurt during the season, obviously, too. If I sign Jackie Bradley at 11:59 p.m. on Monday night, I still have a window. I think it's 72 hours, whatever it is, or it might even be longer than that. I think it is longer. I have a period of time where I can do a physical, and if he doesn't pass the physical, I can void the contract.
Right.
Well, the problem is, if I do that, and then I can't reach an agreement with Jackie Bradley Jr., Jackie Bradley might lose his college eligibility.
Correct.
So what you see is a lot of teams will try to do the – and it also helps to know in his case, had a wrist injury.
Wrist injury.
You like to know exactly what's going on with the wrist before you make, your offer.
That's it. I think we all saw what was going on with his wrist in Omaha when he came out there. And after not having played for like 6 weeks, just took big, aggressive, confident, and effective swings for South Carolina.
Well, early.
I was so impressed with him.
When I saw Jackie Bradley at the tail end of the World Series, I think I saw him go 1-for-13 with an infield single. So,
but he was taking.
No, you're right. He wasn't
holding back though.
Exactly.
He was not holding back. The second game that he played, which was the last game I saw him at, he was drilling the ball against Virginia, and he was in there. I was impressed that a guy who'd been out that long came back with that kind of confidence. But the point is, him, Noe Ramirez, those guys are going to sign, right?
I would think so. Getting back to Jay, just to make something clear too, when people, because we all get questions, hey, so-and-so was seen at Citi Field or at Chase Field. The teams get the players' physicals done early so there aren't last-second problems. Like Dylan Covey or Barrett Laux last year. Problems came up late in the game.
Right.
Anyway, I think Jackie Bradley will sign. I mean, he's a guy who had aspirations to go in the middle of the first round. He's a Boris Corporation guy. He's not going to sign. I'll take the over, John, on the slot at 40, which is 8.29.8. Right. So again, college junior who wants over slot, he's going to have to wait a little bit. I think Noe Ramirez will get more than the fourth round money. I think he'll sign too. And then they've got all these high school guys,
Swihart, in their first 10 rounds. And I also, by the way, they took a lot of insurance type guys later. Summer follows. Blake Forslund, one of my favorite summer follows, a guy who pitched like one inning prior to this season in his college career and has been overrated for a long time because of his – I'm not trying to bust on Blake Forslund, but the guy's been overrated for a long time because of his arm strength. He was a summer follow in the Coastal Plain League gym. Here's his Coastal Plain League line, 0-5, 874 with 24 walks and 35 innings. That guy needs to pitch, so I don't expect the Red Sox to – go crazy on Blake Forslund. But these high school guys, Blake Swihart, Henry Owens, Mookie Betts, Cody Kukuk, Senquez Golson. So that's five guys, right? Over under on them signing. If it's at 3.5, you're going to go over or under on them signing those players.
I'll go under on that.
I don't think they can
sign them all.
All right.
I think Blake, Swihart is a guy who, big price tag. I think it's going to take high twos, maybe something that begins with a three to sign him. And again, they knew that when they took him. I think the Red Sox pay guys. They don't usually have high picks in the first round, so they're willing to pay numerous guys. They're not putting $6 million in one guy. I think they'll get Swihart done. Same logic. I think they'll get Henry Owens done. I don't think it's real close right now, but they'll get him done. Again, he'll be an over-slot guy. He's another one of these high school pitchers who's watching what Joe Ross and Robert Stevenson and Taylor Guerrero and those guys are going to sign for ahead of him. After that, I think it's a little more uncertain. Mookie Betts, I don't think they're real close on. I think he might be more of a – I think they'd obviously like to sign him, but I think he's more kind of on their second tier of priorities. And a case, if they didn't sign somebody they expected to, they might have more money for Mookie Betts, and it might take that more money to sign him away from Tennessee. Kukuk and Golson, I think, are both guys who are looking somewhere in the seven figures. I think they've already made a strong run at Golson, who's playing football at Mississippi, and he turned him down, and he's declined. The last I'd heard, he's declined the opportunity. Boston wanted to bring him to Boston for physical and to try to recruit him a little bit. And he turned the Red Sox down on that. So I don't think they're going to sign Golson, which might mean that the Kukuk has a better chance of getting his seven figures or close to it. And you're right, John. I mean, they're very aggressive. They're probably, considering where they pick, they're probably the most aggressive team in the draft year in and year out. They've made a run at Daniel Gossett.
Yep.
That's been unsuccessful in the 16th round. He's probably going to go to Clemson. Jarrett Brown is a Georgia high school lefty who interests them a little bit. They've got some other guys too. But I think my guess is, getting back to high school guys, I think they'll sign the two top high school guys in Swihart and Owens. And I think it might just be one of Kukuk, Golson, and Betts. But 3.5 is a good place to draw that over under because they could sign two of them. I don't think there's any way they sign all five of those guys. That would surprise me.
The Yankees, Jim. I think we've panned their draft enough. But Dante Bichette Jr. off to a great start, signed early. He has raked in the Gulf Coast League. But they've got a lot of unsigned guys. It's just like they're close on Jordan Coquet, their third rounder, correct?
Well, let's just say we'll call a charade a charade.
Okay. That's a good way to put it.
I think the Yankees have deals with most of their guys. We'll play a different game.
We'll play deal or no deal. Deal or no deal with Sam Stafford. That's a no deal.
Correct? Well, that one's up in the air. It was reported, the Yankees, for whatever reason, the Yankees spend more on revenue sharing and luxury tax and than any other team. But the Yankees, by my logic, would then have the right to do whatever they want in the draft more than any other team, since they're subsidizing the other teams more than anyone.
Right.
But yet the Yankees, I think, want – I think they have a lot of their guys signed, but they want to announce them all at the last second so they don't get yelled at. Which is why a lot of teams wait, because nobody wants to get yelled at. But anyway, going back to Sam Stafford, reported over a month ago in the Austin paper by our good friend Kirk Bowles, knows what he's talking about, that he signed for right around $400,000, which would be slot. And it's never showed up as a done deal on MLB.com or any of the MLB documents where they track draft picks. And the word is there may be something going on with the physical there. And I think Kirk actually had a story today in the Austin paper or a column talking where he mentioned Sam Stafford, and I think it's unclear as to what's going to happen with that one. So that there's no deal, definitely no deal right now on Sam Stafford. I think there was a deal agreed to, and I don't know how that one's going to shake out.
Deal or no deal, Jordan Cote, that's a deal, correct?
That deal, yeah. Everybody in the industry, again, just so I don't look like I'm being cute here, sometimes chasing this draft stuff, you get information on the condition – hey, I'll tell you, what the deal is, but you can't run with it until a certain point. Jordan Cote, I think you can ask anybody in the industry, and they know what Jordan Cote's bonus is going to be. We will go deal on Jordan Cote.
Okay. I'm very curious, Jim. Greg Bird and Jake Cave. Jake Cave I saw in the Coastal Plain League All-Star Game, tallying up our Coastal Plain League top 10 right now. Jake Cave is certainly, as a unsigned sixth-round pick, I think he's the leader in the clubhouse. He'll be number one in the Coastal Plain League. What do you got on Greg Bird and Jake Cave? Deal or no deal on both those guys?
Let's just see on Greg Bird again. If you want to talk to somebody, almost anybody in the industry, not on the record and not for publication, you could probably find out what Greg Bird is going to sign for. So we'll say deal on Greg Bird. Jake Cave is not done. I think it's going to take sandwich round money to sign him away from LSU. And, the Yankees have the money. We'll see on that one. I think there's a good chance they sign him.
Is Greg Bird's deal the one that is raising the most eyebrows in the industry? Safe to say that?
I don't know about that. I mean, I think certainly, there are times where one team values a player a lot more than a lot of other teams do. Greg Bird's going to be very well compensated. I don't think a lot of teams necessarily would have given him the number the Yankees are going to wind up giving him. But again, I mean, you could probably go to just about any team and find a guy who's going to get a lot of money that the majority of teams would go, I don't know what they're doing with that one. So that's a good way to put it. I don't think he's raised any more than some other guys. But I think it's probably fair to say the Yankees probably are paying Greg Bird more money than almost any other team would have been willing to pay him.
They don't have anyone sign after the first 25 rounds, which is really weird. Now, there's some interest in Daniel Camarena, who was a top 200 caliber guy, their 20th round pick. Anyone else to expect after the 25th round with the Yankees?
We'll see. I think Camarena maybe. I mean, you can never say never with the Yankees because they can spend whatever they want on these guys. I think Chaz Hebert in the 27th round. Louisiana high school pitcher, maybe. John Brebbia, Elon right-handed pitcher, maybe. Skylar Janisse, Canadian right-hander in the 34th round, maybe. Joey Mayer from New Hampshire, 38th rounder. He's another guy who might have a chance to get signed. So those are four guys who I think maybe have a chance to get something done. I don't think they'll get all four of them. But, I mean, the Yankees certainly have the financial wherewithal to sign whoever they want. And wouldn't surprise me at all if they signed a couple more of those guys.
Tampa and Toronto, Jim, the next two teams had as many picks as any teams did. Tampa with a record setting, 10 of the first 60 picks. These could go on a while. Tampa's got all kinds of intrigue. Let's start off with their high school guys. Taylor Guerrieri, 24th. Tyler Goodell at 41, going to be a really tough choice, it seems like, for him. J.D. Davis in the fifth round. Any surprises there? You know, Tanner English, I know, is a guy here in the Carolinas, a South Carolina recruit there's been a lot of interest in because of the Gamecocks. What's your take on their high school unsigned players at this point?
I think they'll get – I mean, again, I think the first-rounders are all going to get done. If you were basing whether guys would sign or not on how close they are today, you might be alarmed by Taylor Guerrieri or Mikey Matuka, who we'll talk about, who's their other first-round pick. I think Taylor Guerrieri will get done. Taylor Guerrieri is sitting there at pick 24. Joe Ross at 25 is getting offered, you know, 2.5. Robert Stevenson's trying to piggyback a couple picks behind him. Of course, you know, especially if you're getting offered slot or close to it, you're going to wait and see what the market bears on these guys. Tyler Goodell, he's going to sign. I think Tyler Goodell, I think you're going to look and see, we'll probably see a seven-figure deal for Tyler Goodell when all is said and done. J.D. Davis, last word we heard, Aaron Fitt's been calling some of the college coaches. I think Cal State Fullerton feels pretty good about keeping J.D. Davis right now in the fifth round. And after that, and you know, with all the early picks, I don't think they're going to do a lot of damage after the 10th round. So, you know, maybe there'll be a guy or two they sign, but I don't think they're going to go big money on any of their guys after the 10th round.
And that's that makes a lot of sense. So then Matuk, college junior, Grayson Garvin. I like Grayson Garvin. I'm not sure how much we can talk about on the record with Grayson Garvin, but that seems like that's a unique case in the draft this year, is it not? His signing has been complicated, correct?
Yeah, I mean, that's probably one we shouldn't talk about in any greater detail than that right now. But you know, it hit an unexpected snag, and we'll see how that one plays out. You know, Matuk's a guy who, you know, again, I think he'll sign, but I don't think they're particularly close right now. I mean, before the draft, there was some talk that he could have gone in the teens. You know, he could have gone as high as, say, 13th in the draft to the Mets. And there was talk that he wanted a major league contract. Well, he didn't go 13th. He went 31. And, you know, the Rays have all these picks. Don't have to sign any one of them in particular to make or break their draft. And you know, the difference in slot money between 13 and 31 is $900,000 or $700,000. So, I mean, I don't think they're particularly close right now. If you told me that one blew up, I wouldn't be totally shocked. But again, I think they'll work it out. It's just, you know, it's going to go down to the wire. You know, Garvin, you know, we'll see. And that's pretty much it. You know, they've signed, I think, everybody else in the 10th round, you know, college-wise. And, you know, now we'll go to Toronto, where they really haven't signed anybody yet.
It's pretty unbelievable. The first 10 rounds, they have two guys signed, Tom Robson and Jeremy. I'm not going to pronounce his last name. And then they have Jacob Anderson and Jed Musgrave. I should say. Say it again.
It's Gabrazewski.
Gabrazewski.
Your second round.
Who was a surprising pick with the screws in the elbow. That's him, right?
That's him, yep.
Okay. Well, one screw.
They got those guys done. But, you know, here the Blue Jays otherwise, they have four picks in the top two rounds who are unsigned. And then
plus John Stilson, who's a complicated case.
And they got rounds 3, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10 all unsigned. And, you know, the Blue Jays are the other team of the Red Sox that I'd nominate for most aggressive in the draft.
Right.
I would not count the Blue Jays out depending on what happens up top and maybe even what happens up top. They got some intriguing guys in the team. Matt Dean in the 13th round we saw as a sandwich round talent. Cole Wiper in the 14th round and Richard Prigatano in the 16th round both made our top 200 prospects list. They got Aaron Nola, a high school right-hander from Louisiana, who I think is going to wind up at LSU, but he's another guy who almost made our top 200. I mean, Jarek Suter from Indiana, multi-sport athlete going to Texas Christian, who's real intriguing. I mean, they can spend a lot of money if they want to. They're going to spend a lot of money. I think when all is said and done, the Blue Jays may very well own the draft record for spending at the end of this draft.
I love that. I love to hear that.
They may crush it too.
They may crush it right to get all these guys signed.
Yeah, I don't know if they'll sign it. I mean, last year Toronto spent $11.6 million, which would have been a record. The old record was 11.5 by the Nationals, but both the Nationals and the Pirates spent 11.9 last year. But I mean, let's just go from the top here.
Tyler Beattie.
Tyler Beattie. you know, we talked about him in the overview.
Yeah.
You know, reports before the draft, he had a pre-draft deal with the Blue Jays. Now there's reports that he's going to Vanderbilt. And I think, you know, I don't think he had a pre-draft deal with the Blue Jays, like you said. I think he may have had some pre-draft deals in place with other teams he didn't get to. And I don't think he's definitely going to Vanderbilt. I still think he's going to sign, but I think they're looking for a number, ultimately, that begins with a 3. You know, Dwight Smith Jr. kind of gets lost in the shuffle with these high school pitchers who went in the top 2 rounds to the Jays. But, I mean, Dwight Smith Jr., you know, his dad's a former big leaguer. You know, he's a sandwich pick. I mean, you know, my guess is, you know, his slot's 675. He's probably not going to sign for slot if he's not signed by now. Then you go to Kevin Comer, high school pitcher from New Jersey. I think he's looking for $2 million.
Another, you got Vanderbilt, Daniel Norris. Another Vanderbilt commitment.
Right. And then you got Daniel Norris in the second round, Clemson recruit, who on some list came into the year as the top high school prospect in the country. I don't think Daniel Norris is signing for a number that doesn't begin with a 2. I mean, they might need close to $8 million to sign those 3 high school pitchers. Plus Dwight Smith might be close to $1 million. You know, John Stilson, who had some arm issues at the end of the year, or might have been a late first or sandwich pick. I think he's going to sign. He might sign today. I think he's going to get, you know, I think he might get in the 400,000 range, something around there. Andrew Chin in the 5th round had Tommy John surgery, and right. I think it's still going to take him $1 million, or at least that's kind of the asking price to keep him from going to college. So, you know, that one's kind of an interesting one. We'll have to see. You know, he very well could wind up at Boston College. Anthony DeSclafani, you know, I think is looking for sandwich round money in the 6th round.
Which is shocking.
I mean, yep. Christian Lopes in the 7th round is a guy who was one of those guys who became a top prospect very early on, you know, early in his high school career, and didn't quite play up to that.
He was on our last Baseball for the Ages, Jim. He was on the 12-year-old team in our last time we did Baseball for the Ages, along with A.J. Cole, along with Bryce Harper, along with Deliner DeShields, Jr. So Christian Lopes, you know, been on the radar a long time.
You know, 2 or 3 years ago, people would have thought he had a good chance to go in the 1st round. So I don't think he's necessarily going to be, you know, super cheap to sign away from Southern California necessarily. You know, Mark Biggs is a Kentucky high school pitcher. You know, Kentucky's one of the draft states I do. I heard all along that his asking price was $600 or so. You know, Andrew Suarez from Miami. You know, we'll see. You know, that was another one of our top 200 guys who went lower than he should. You know, he's not going to sign just to sign. I mean, he's going to be tough. And, you know, Aaron Garza in the 10th round, that was one that kind of caught me off guard. He's ultra projectable, you know, 6'4", 160 Texas high school pitcher, but it's kind of 85 to 88.
Right.
You know, to me, like, that's a $150,000 guy if you're signing him. So I can't imagine he'll be crazy. You know, and then we have the guys we talked about in the teens. You know, Matt Dean might want, you know, sandwich money. Wiper might want, you know, a lot. Prigitano. I mean, if they want to sign all their guys, let me do some quick math here, John. That might be 9.5. I mean, I don't know if they're gonna give Anderson $1 million, but 10.5, 11.5. It the odometer's going up here. I think just for unsigned guys, if they sign most of their guys in the first 10 rounds, plus let's say we'll give them one of those guys in the teens, that might be $13 or $14 million right there.
That would be a record just on their unsigned guys, not counting the guys they've already signed, which include 4 guys, in the first 5 rounds?
Well, and the 4 high school guys they've signed in the first 5 rounds got, you know, about close to 2.5. So we'll see, but the potential is there if Toronto wants to get very aggressive and sign these guys, that they could spend $15 million plus on this draft. So that'll be the fun one to watch, is Toronto.
No doubt.
Because they have a lot. And again, I'm not saying anything's going on with Toronto, but again, we talk about this stupid system. I can't imagine that Toronto is not at least laying groundwork on some of these guys, because I don't know if it's physically possible to wrap up. We went through, let's say they have 12 or 13 more guys are going to sign. How are you going to do all of that on Monday? You know, so they've got to be, you know, trying to figure out some way to at least lay some groundwork.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Baseball America podcast with John and Jim. American League Central, Jim. The White Sox are a team that – now, where are they in that spending in the last 5 years? And because
last
of that
– since the signing deadline, they are dead last at $15.5 million.
That's what I thought. Are there anybody there left going to go after here late? They've only got one player unsigned in the first 10 rounds on Ian Gardeck. I guess two, Ben O'Shea, the JC Lefty. Anybody in there? Are they going to go crazy on Ben O'Shea?
I don't think it's tough because the junior college guys are always the toughest to figure. You know, Gardeck's ticketed for Alabama. Ben O'Shea is headed to Maryland. You know, both JUCO guys. On O'Shea, I had heard, you know, you have a kind of this dual slot, which is also kind of stupid. After the fifth round, you're not supposed to pay more than 125, but it's kind of okay if you pay 150, which is – so anyway, I think going back to that, I think they're offering him slot, whether it's the 125 or 150, and I think he wants about twice that. So, you know, I don't know. You know, Gardeck's a guy who kind of – was the talk of fall ball last year on the Texas JUCO circuit.
Right.
My guess is he's not going to sign because we're talking about the White Sox. They don't spend on the draft. You know, they're not the type of team that's going to give Ian Gardeck $500,000 in the eighth round. He had an he has a great arm, inconsistent spring, and pitched his way into the junior college bullpen. To me, that's a guy that, and I'm just guessing here, I don't have any inside information on him, that the White Sox are probably offering him the 125 or 150. And if I'm Gardeck, I go to Alabama next year with a chance to prove myself, you know, against better competition in the SEC, and figure I can at least get that next year. And I don't think, there's a late round guy that they're gonna, you know, invest a lot of money in. That would surprise me. They just don't do that.
Just out of character. I agree. It would be very out of character for the White Sox to do it. I don't rule it out, but it'd be very out of character. Meanwhile, the Cleveland Indians, Jim, have shifted gears in recent years in the draft. And they just gutted their farm system. Their farm system has taken a big hit this year as they've graduated impact players of the big leagues like Lonnie Chisenhall and Jason Kipnis. And now they've traded their top pitching prospects in White and Pomerantz, soon to be dealt, plus Joe Gardner. That's five of their top 10 guys from last year right there. So are the Indians maybe even more inclined to spend on their unsigned picks like Francisco Lindor, Dylan Howard, Stephen Tarpley, some of these other guys?
Yeah, you know, that's one way of looking at it. I mean, I think they would have spent anyway because last year, you know, they spent $9.4 million on the draft, which was far and away a franchise record for the Indians. So I think they would have been willing to spend regardless. You know, they're in kind of an unenviable position a little bit with Francisco Lindor at eight because we keep talking about these first seven picks who, you know, Trevor Bauer's already signed and it's, you know, $4.45 million in guarantees, but he'll probably collect close to seven. All these other guys are going to get deals, you know, six, seven, maybe more ahead of him. And then you got to deal with Francisco Lindor, who's a good player, but he's not quite on that tier. But yet the guy who goes in front of him might sign for $6 or $7 million. So they'll get him done. I anticipate, you know, I couldn't even guess what number he's going to wind up getting, to be honest with you, John. I guess I could guess, but I'd probably be wrong. I mean, you know, I doubt it'll be for slot. You know, maybe it's $2.5 to $3 million. You know, whatever number I come up with, the advisor is going to think I'm one. Either the advisor or the team is going to think I'm too high or too low. So I don't think they're close, and I think that one's going to come down to the wire. And then Dylan Howard's a guy who was a first round talent, who went in the second round, another, you know, Boris Corporation client. I don't think he's going to sign for less than first round money. So I mean, it might take. You know, both those guys' numbers might start with twos, and I might be thinking low on those guys. I don't know. You know, I do think they'll sign. My guess is they'll probably get both those guys signed. And with Tarpley, we'll see. I think Tarpley's probably going to take at least, you know, sandwich-type money to not go to USC next year.
Yeah, that's pretty fascinating. And then Aaron Fitfave, Zach McPhee, he's not a guy you go way over. But Kevin Brady in the 17th round I think is an interesting guy. Sean Armstrong had a pretty decent summer in the Coastal Plain League as a summer follow. Anybody else further down there, like the 20s, that they might go after? Maybe one of the better names in the draft, Tyler Nerdon. Tyler Nerdon just sounds too much like Tyler Durden not to be a great draft name.
Yeah, you know, Taylor Sparks was a guy, you know, we liked. Dylan Peters was a guy who was on our top 200. You know, Kevin Kramer was a guy who almost made our top 200. They have guys to spend money on. And, the question is, are these guys – backup plans if Dylan Howard and or Stephen Tarpley fall through, or are they going to get these guys done in addition to them? So we'll see. I mean, they certainly have, you know, some intriguing guys like you suggested and a couple more I threw out there to spend money on after the 10th round if they want to.
Yeah, I expect what's the over-under, I guess, on the total number the Indians might end up spending? $7 million on their whole draft class? Would you go over that?
Yeah, that's probably fair. I'm trying to do the math in my head because they've already spent, you know, seven, eight. You know, they signed Eric Haas this morning for close to six. They've probably spent, about 2.5 so far. Yeah, I think they could go 7.5. They'll be, probably $8 million maybe especially if they sign both Lindor and Howard and get a couple of these other guys.
Now the Tigers have been a team that have gone well over slot in the past, but it doesn't seem like Detroit really has too many opportunities for that. They seem like, they didn't have a first round pick. They got their second rounder, James McCann, a college junior, wrapped up finally this year. Are the Tigers basically done?
I think so. The story we all heard, and I think you've heard it too, John, is that, they really wanted Tyler Beattie. They were hoping his price tag would get him to drop to 76, and then they could spend big like they did last year when they didn't have a first-round pick, and they gave Nick Castellanos $3.45 million in the sandwich round. And, by the time they got to their 76 pick, I don't think there was that big-ticket guy there they really wanted. I mean, they've signed their first 14 picks. The one guy up in the air right now, and I think it could go either way, is Tyler Gibson in the 15th round. He's a high school outfielder from Georgia, recruit of Georgia Tech, very athletic kid. And it just comes down to, again, he has opportunity to go to Georgia Tech, good school. He's not going to sign just to sign. And, if he signs, I would anticipate he'd get a bigger bonus. I guess I'm speculating it would take more than the $577,900 that James McCann got to keep him from going to Georgia Tech. And we'll see if I just don't know if they're going to give it to him or not.
Pretty important recruit for the Yellow Jackets as well, who would like him to be their future shortstop. And he fits there, at least the college level. The Royals, Jim, a lot of people are going to be watching the Royals. Three of their first four picks unsigned. Two-sport guy, Bubba Starling. I guess he could be as many sports as he wanted to be, Bubba Starling. But college potential to play at Nebraska, both football and baseball, with their new head coach, Darren Erstad. Brian, she's a brick house in the third round. Kyle Smith, one of my favorite players in the draft there in the fourth round. What are you hearing on those three? I think we're expecting all three of those guys to sign, correct?
We are. They just signed their fifth-round pick for $600,000. The Royals are a team that has not been shy about going over slot. They've spent a lot of money on the draft to rebuild. Fifth in the last 4 years in terms of draft spending at $31 million.
Also, a big part of that, obviously, is that they've been poor at the major league level, and they always draft in the first five picks, it seems.
Yep, and they've been aggressive with later-round guys, too.
Good point.
Your Chris Dwyers and your Will Myers, both got huge money. But, Bubba, like we alluded to with some of these other guys, I think he's got a high price tag. He's represented or advised by the Boris Corporation. And I'm sure – he's a better prospect than fellow Boris Corporation advisee Donovan Tate was a couple years ago. Donovan Tate got $6.25 million on a two-sport spread deal. I think Bubba Starling is going to get $7.5 million when all is said and done. But whatever the number is, I know Nebraska quarterback. I got Huskers fans asking me about him all the time. He's going to get offered whatever the number is, more money than I think anybody could possibly turn down. So I think he's going. Anybody listen to the National League podcast, Bubba Starling will get offered enough money that if he were my son, I would send him to pro ball. he will get more than my son AJ's $5 million signability.
I like the way we put Brian that. We're just going to call that the AJ number for the rest of the podcast.
It's $5 million. Well, he might come down a little bit. We'll see. Depending on he's a big Astros fan, so I think the Astros could get him a little bit of a – not a hometown discount, but like a fan discount there. But
okay.
Brian Brickhouse, third round. It might be a seven-figure guy. He's out of the Woodlands, home of Kyle Drabek and Jameson Taillon and also Paul Goldschmidt. It sounds like he's going to wind up signing. Again, won't be close to slot. Royals also gave $750 to their second-round picks. They've already started to spend. And their fourth-round pick is Kyle Smith, high school right-hander from Florida. And my guess is he'll probably sign. The Royals' track record is they want a guy. They sign him. I think the highest unsigned pick they're going to have is probably Evan Beal, their eighth rounder. Sounds like he's going to wind up going to South Carolina. I don't know if they have anybody late that they'd spend a bunch of money on. I think they're going to concentrate their efforts on those guys at the top. I think they're going to get those guys signed.
Makes a lot of sense. That has been the Royals' track record. I love Kyle Smith. That guy's interesting.
It might be $9 million. So if we're just doing over-unders, it might be $9 million to sign those three guys with the majority of that money going to Bubba. But Kansas City has spent that kind of money in the past.
It has. A team that has not spent that kind of money in the past is the Minnesota Twins, Jim. And they haven't drafted high. They haven't drafted in the first 10 picks since taking Joe Mauer in 2001. Here again, they drafted not till 30th. They're going to draft high in 2012 because they've had a poor year at the big league level. But a little surprising to see their guys unsigned. You get the college junior, but and Levi Michael, their first rounder. But it sounds like they're going to have some difficulty. Are they having any difficulty with their two supplemental picks, Travis Harrison and Hudson Boyd? And do they have some backup plans later on in the draft class?
I think they'll get Michael done. I think he's another one of these guys, college junior, stuck on slot. You know, he'll probably get a little over slot maybe when all's said and done, but he'll get done. Travis Harrison, I think he'll get done. Maybe a seven-figure number, which is why that one hasn't happened yet. You know, Hudson Boyd, the complicating factor on that one a little bit. You know, we were talking about Dan Vogelbach with the Cubs and how it's an open secret that the Cubs are going to pay him a pretty big number. It's just not official, but everybody's been hearing the same number, you know, first round type of number since, you know, right after the draft ended. And Hudson Boyd is his teammate. And I don't think the Twins are going to pay Hudson Boyd what Dan Vogelbach got. And I think, you know, I think they'll get Boyd done, but that's one, you know, if we're picking deals that maybe don't get done, you know, maybe it's him, because I think, you know, this is another case of how stupid this system is. Hudson Boyd had some teams on him in the first round, and then Hudson Boyd, I believe, told those teams, if I go in the first round, I'll sign for slot because I want to get out and play. But, you know, end of the first round is roughly $1 million. If I don't go in the first round and I have to wait, I'm not going to sign for the same number. It's going to be a higher number because if I'm going to have to wait all summer and lose 2 months of my pro career, I'm not signing for the same number if it doesn't mean I can't go out and play right away. And I think that's the situation they're in right now. I think they'll get it done. But again, I think when all is said and done, there isn't a single guy in the first round of the sandwich round. I mean, Brett Austin, who we talked about with the Padres, if he sticks to $2 million, you know, maybe he's the toughest sign. Or Kevin Comer of the Blue Jays, if he sticks to $2 million, maybe he's the toughest sign. But I do think almost all these guys are going to get done. My over under an unsigned picks in the first and sandwich round would be, you know, 1.5. But if you're picking guys who might not sign, that things might break down when all is said and done, then maybe Hudson Boyd's one of those guys. But just to clarify, I do think they will get him signed. I just think that's been a little bit more difficult than they hoped.
Yeah, that's a danger one. That makes sense. Jason Wheeler, again, a college junior. Brett Lee, the difficult JUCO guy we've talked about. Adam McCreary was a guy who came into the year with some higher expectations. How about a couple guys who seem like they're pretty interesting? One, a guy from up in your neck of the woods, Nick Birdie up in Illinois. And then James Ramsey, a summer follow in the Cape Cod League, who'd be a great senior to get back if you're Florida State, but sounds like he has some real decisions to make.
Yeah, you know, it's, you know, Birdie's a guy who came out, you know, was great at the Under Armour All-America game last August, you know, threw 93-95 and topped out at 97 in the fall, and then showed the same kind of arm early this spring. Then had some various physical issues and was never the same guy. I don't think he's going to sign. I would imagine his number is too high. He's already in summer school in Louisville. You know, he reportedly wanted seven figures. I'd be shocked if he signed.
Okay.
I do think they have a good chance. I think they're making a run James Ramsey. I think they have a chance to get James Ramsey done. You know, it might be second round money to sign him after the summer he had, but I think he might be the guy who, you know, after those first couple guys we're talking about, might be, you know, their top priority right now to try to get done.
And the surprising thing on that to me is I really like James Ramsey, but if there's an organization, I know you don't take need, but I mean, they've got plenty of outfielders, you know. I'm just surprised. I really like James Ramsey. I thought he would go a lot higher than he went. Maybe if he gets second round money, that'll make me, you know, feel vindicated in my assessment of James Ramsey. I'm just surprised that that would be the guy that the Twins would go over slot for, because they have plenty of corner bats and plenty of outfielders, and just surprises me that would be the guy. I would have thought it would have been someone more like a Rocky McCord, you know, later on, or a personal cheese ball out the yin yang in the 40th round, Kyle Bearclaw, who I loved out of high school. Man, I was all about Kyle Bearclaw 3 years ago out of high school. Plus, just a great name, Kyle Bearclaw.
I think it just with Ramsey, good John, it just goes back to he had such a good summer on the Cape.
Yeah.
That there's very few things you can do as a draftee that to help your cause more than have a good Cape. I mean, we see it, and when we're talking about Preston Tucker, the reverse is true too. We see it all the time where a guy has a great Cape and maybe not a very good spring, and there's still teams that believe in that Cape. and you get rewarded for it. And he came out, you know, a lot of these summer, you know, college juniors, you know, who don't go high in the draft, you know, wind up going and playing summer ball to try to boost their stock. And James Ramsey probably helped himself about as much as anybody this summer.
I wonder how much, how similar it is in the Twins system, how similar they think it is to a guy like Bobby Keelty, who they signed out of Cape 13 years ago, you know.
Yeah, he was a non-drafted free agent who really helped himself.
Right, absolutely. Let's move on to the American League West as J.J. Cooper comes in to check and make sure that we're okay on this long podcast.
It's two podcasts.
It is two podcasts. The Angels, Jim, first draft for Rick Wilson. They've had some obvious success with draft picks from the previous from Eddie Bain. It's basically all the same scouts. So they really didn't have a ton of turnover, three or four area guys, but same staff, same front office. Mike Clevinger and Austin Wood, a couple of hard-throwing guys who don't really know where it's going all the time. And Dominic Jose, a Stanford signee. Seem like those are their only real big questions left. Are those the questions left for this for the Angels?
Yeah, I don't. You know, they might be done. You know, and they got Wayne Taylor, who went one round ahead of Dominic Jose, is also a Stanford kid. I don't have a great feel for if they're going to be able to sign these guys. You know, I don't think they're real close on Clevinger. You know, the junior college guys are always hard to figure out. You know, Austin Wood. You know, I think again, college junior. You know, if you're offering him slot, he's not going to sign for slot. So I don't know where that one goes, and I don't think they signed the two Stanford recruits, Taylor and Jose. So they, the Angel wouldn't surprise me at all if we're done with Angel signees. You know, that they've signed everybody they're going to wind up signing.
It sounds like we are. Oakland, Jim, they've seemed like they've signed. Some of their big question was B.A. Vollmuth. They got him done. They got a couple other college guys, but it seems like the A's are done. Are they not?
Might be. I think they're still kicking the tires on some guys, but not, you know, I don't think it's guys who aren't going to cost them necessarily a boatload of money, but they're not even looking to kind of meet in the middle and spend, you know, maybe a little bit more than they want to spend. But, you know, the A's went all said and done. You know, they didn't have a second round pick, you know, went $118,000 over slot for Sonny Gray and have been pretty much slotting everybody else. They might spend less on the draft than just about anybody. You know, still talking to Colin O'Connell in the eighth round, the Fullerton right-hander. Still talking to Jace Fry in the ninth round, the Oregon high school left-hander. Still talking to Chris Lamb in the 11th round, the Davidson left-hander. Might cost – I mean, I'm just guessing here, but, I mean, I think you might be able to sign those three guys for $800,000 together.
Yeah.
And haven't closed a deal. You know, they got Brandon McGee in the 21st round, kind of real interesting Arizona State football player.
Yep.
But I think, I mean, they've already got to be practicing football at Arizona State, and, you know, I don't necessarily think they're going to do that. So they might get one of those guys we were just talking about, you know, Lamb, Fry, O'Connell, you know, some of those guys, but I think they're pretty much done, you know, done with this draft. You know, I don't, you're not going to see I don't think there's a late round guy they're going to throw a ton of money at. And I'm not convinced that they're necessarily, you know, I think they could sign all three of those guys with O'Connell, Fryer, Lamb, or none of them. They're still working on those guys.
The Mariners, Jim, I have a few more questions. You've got the obvious guy. I mean, like we talked about, college junior Brad Miller in the second round. Carson Smith, is he just a typical college junior, or were there some injury issues with him down the stretch of the season?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot going on with the Mariners. You know, it's funny.
Yeah. There's a lot.
Yeah, they've kind of signed their draft upside down. They signed everybody in rounds 10 through 23, and then rounds 25 through 28. You know, they've signed it to all their late guys, but, you know, let's start from the top.
Yeah, Danny Holtz is going to be tough.
I think, again, when you take the guy at two, you're going to sign it. You can make the point that, again, you know, there's any number of college pitchers, Scherzer, Jared Weaver, Luke Hochevar, Aaron Crow, who have gone to independent ball and come back and gotten paid and, you know, paid well. I think the Mariners need Danny Holtson with the year they're having more than Danny Holtson needs the Mariners. You know, if it comes down to it, the number, and I haven't heard, you know, I don't know where this number comes from, if it's true or not true. The number you hear floating around is Danny Holtson's 10 million plus.
Right.
You know, I don't necessarily think he's getting 10 million plus, but he's from a very well-to-do family. And again, you know, if you're offering these guys slot, 3-4 days before the draft, when you know Slot's not going to come close to getting the job done, you got a lot of ground to make up. And again, I think they will. I'd be shocked if he doesn't sign. But again, I just think back to Aaron Crow a few years ago with the Nationals, where the Nationals stuck at Slot. And I think Aaron was asking for a major league deal around, I don't know, 7 or 7.5. They weren't even close. And then they couldn't bridge the gap quick enough. So you never know. But I do think Holton will sign, but they're not close. I think same thing on Brad Miller. You're talking second round pick getting offered Slot. I think it's they're going to have to, you know, probably pay him somewhere in the sandwich area to sign him. You know, his Slot is 587. You know, my guess is like all these college juniors, they probably haven't gone past that. And they're probably going to have to sign it. My guess is he'll get done. I can't imagine it won't. Kevin Krohn, third rounder, high schooler, you know, brother of the Angels' first round pick, CJ Krohn. He's at TCU already.
Right.
You know, which again doesn't mean that he can't, you know, pack his stuff back up and go join the Mariners. But you know, we'll see on that one. I don't have a great feel. I think that one could go either way. Fifth rounder Tyler Marlett, you know, he's committed to Central Florida. Same type of thing. I could see that one going either way. We're talking about a team last year that let their third-round pick, Ryan Stanek, go to Arkansas, and Ryan Stanek's probably going to be a first-round pick if he's on the border of being draft eligible, you know, in the 2012 draft. Right. Ryan Stanek's going to be a first-round pick in 2012 or 2013 whenever he's eligible. So anyway, they didn't sign him last year. Yeah, so Marlett and Krohn could go either way. Carson Smith, who you were mentioning, John, he's got some shoulder issues. Had a great year. Had a great year for Texas State. Shoulder tendonitis in offseason. Shoulder issues. I know there were some teams a little leery of the medical on him. So I don't know what's going on with that one. You know, that could go either way. And then the
real mystery guy, Kevin, what is it? Co-host?
Most intriguing background. Yeah, most intriguing background the whole draft when we get around to draft report cards. Kevin Cohos, who has played some in Ohio and got some exposure. You know, sounds like a real interesting player. Is a, you know, plus or plus plus speed, plus arm, interesting bat. Although I don't know what kind of competition you really face with the, you know, armed forces circuit in Europe, the armed forces high school circuit. But you know, he has been seen. I guess he's played some summer ball in Ohio. So he'd be really, you know, shortstop. You know, just really, you know, you could dream about this guy's upside. You just there's not a lot of track record. But there were apparently 5 or 6 teams on him. From what I'm hearing, it may take close to 7 figures to sign Kevin Cohos. And while that may seem like crazy, the other part of it is I think he's going to not go to Ohio State where he committed. I think he goes to Chipola Junior College next year if he doesn't sign. And here's the thing. You know, there are only a handful of teams on him because not everybody knew about him. You know, if he does, you know, this is a guy who, if he is as good as this sketchy scouting report we have on him, you know, leads us to believe, he goes to Chipola and gets a ton of exposure, he's going to go a lot higher next year's draft. So my guess is I don't think they sign Kevin Cohos. I think, you know, they might be willing to make a run at him. I just, you know, are they going to go 7 figures? If that's really what it takes, that would surprise me a little bit.
I think our scouting report's pretty decent, actually. I think Connor talked to a couple of dudes that seen him in Europe. So he's interesting. I think there's no doubt.
There were some teams who really liked him. It's just he was not, you know, he's a guy, I think, if he goes to Chipola and all 30 teams see him, then he's going to go pretty good.
Yeah.
Next year, he has a chance to go pretty good next year.
And finally, wrapping up the longest podcast of Baseball America history, the Texas Rangers, Jim. They're not done, but they're mostly done. But they got some interesting high school guys. They're in the first with single-digit picks. Brandon Woodruff, the right-hander out of Mississippi. We talked a little bit about Mississippi high school guys in the National League part of the podcast. Derek Fisher, very intriguing player out of Pennsylvania. And then Max Pentecost, kind of the Luke Bailey of this year's draft, the high school catcher from Georgia who could have gone in the first 3 or 4 rounds but then had elbow injury, Tommy John surgery in the 7th round. So there's signs that he's going to sign. And then they have the intriguing high school kid from Idaho, Cy Sneed. Not sure if you've checked out any of Cy Sneed's YouTube videos, but he seems interesting. And one of the best names in the draft, Joey Pancake, down in the 42nd round. Doesn't sound like Joey Pancake's going to sign, but which of these high school guys are the Rangers going to be bold on and go over Slot for?
I think the Rangers may be done. I mean, we're talking about a team that spent, you know, $15 million or so on Leonis Martin earlier in the year, the Cuban defector, which looks like a good deal so far. They spent, you know, close to $8.5 million on 2 Dominican outfielders.
Right.
You know, at the start of the July 2nd signing period, and pretty much have been, you know, almost all slot in the draft. In fact, I think they have pretty much been slot in the draft. You know, maybe a little over for a couple. Connor Sadzik got 350 in the 11th round. It's probably their biggest over slot guy. You know, I think they'd like to make a run at Woodruff, but he's told people he's going to Mississippi State, and I don't think they're going to be able to sign him away from Mississippi State. You know, Derek Fisher's a guy who was telling people, you know, before the draft he wanted $2 million. I don't think he's going to be signable either. I think he's going to Virginia. Pentecost, I think they're going to make a run at. You know, he's an interesting high school catcher from Georgia who would have gone higher if he hadn't had Tommy John surgery. But, I don't know if they're going to go after any of those later round guys. Your Cy Snead or Joey Pancake or any of those guys. I think, you know, it may be, you know, maybe make a run at Pentecost. You know, and maybe one other guy. But I think for the most part, they're done. You know, they will not have spent a ton on the draft when all is said and done compared to other teams. But they obviously felt like their money was best spent internationally this year. And I do think, too, you know, with their draft, you know, the Rangers, you know, like up-the-middle athlete type of players or high-ceiling pitchers. And I think the two guys they really wanted in this draft were hoping would follow them were Tyler Beede and Brandon Nimmo. You know, Nimmo went 13th to the Mets. Beede went 21st to the Blue Jays. And I think they kind of changed course a little bit with those guys off the board. And you know, I think they were willing to spend on the draft if they could have had those guys. Like, if those guys had gotten to 33 and 37 somehow, I think the Rangers would have been all in on those guys and spent to sign them. Didn't work out, so they kind of changed their amateur acquisition strategy midstream, you know, as how they were going to allocate their money this year.
Well, Jim, we went through all 30 clubs. We could take 2 more hours and talk about how dumb the process is. Actually, I think we probably could just sum it up in 2 minutes, but let's really hope. We had a story on it earlier. I know you've done a little reporting. We'll save it for another podcast, but I think we really are hoping that next year in the new CBA, at the very least, this deadline gets moved up to July 15th, right? I mean, is it the least we can hope for next year?
Yeah, I don't think we're going to get hard slotting. I do think we'll get an earlier deadline. Could be July. It could be as early as July 1st. You know, maybe more likely July 15th. But I definitely think we will have an earlier deadline, which, you know, we'll talk about this at a later date when we know what's actually going to happen. But I don't think it's going to change what guys get. It's just going to streamline the process and make everybody a lot happier. I think most of the guys are still going to get the same amount of money, but we'll just, instead of having to go through this charade, it'll get done in a much more timely fashion.
It would make the Futures Game week awfully exciting. That would be player development week in baseball. You'd start with the Futures Game. You'd finish with the signing deadline. That would be a great week for Baseball America. But this is a big week. We always have a ton of traffic, and most of it's because of the hard work that you do. Obviously, a lot of us contribute. But I just want to say thanks for all the hard work you do in the middle of August and throughout the summer on the draft signing deadline. It's, you know, those relationships obviously take a lot of work, and we appreciate it. So thanks.
Well, thanks, John. I enjoy doing it. And you probably heard the phones ringing in the background at the end of the podcast. I have to return a call and and see who that one is concerning. And good times, and hopefully people will enjoy their 2+ hours of podcasting that we put together this morning.
We hope so. We'll probably never do 2+ hours again, except for draft deadline next July, hopefully. For Jim Callis, I'm John Manuel. Thanks so much for joining us on these two Baseball America podcasts. Until next time, so long, everybody.